For more, visit janeclarkpoetry.ie. Okay, so please give a big round of applause for Jane Clark. Thank you both.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Cathal. And it's a real pleasure to be here. I've heard about O'Bail many times over the years, and I'm delighted to be here. I'd like to start with a poem tonight that was inspired by a question somebody asked me at a reading once about the process of writing a poem. Dry Stone Wall. I'll skim the scraw, dig a trench wide and deep to hold the given stone. Lay silver grey against green, rocks with square planes to build off, slivers thin as slate to level in between. I lift the stones, test where they'll nestle into what's already there. Fill the middle with spalls, keep the edge stones from falling in. I use old stones, dappled with lichen and moss. Leave gaps to let the wind blow through, nooks for pennywort and heartstone to grow. I'll cover the joins, mind the batter, stack each course till it takes its place between two fields. Keep a few of the finest for the finish, long and flat capstones to span the width. Obviously, the question of who owns the land is very contentious in Ireland, always has been. And so this is my take on that one, a different take on it. And I've done it in the form of a villanelle. And I thought it was kind of suited to the theme, as that was originally a farm labourer's song. That's where it came from originally. Who owns the field? Is it the one who is named in the deeds, whose hands never touch the clay? Or is it the one who gathers the sheaves, takes a scythe to the thistles, plants the beech, digs out the dockweed, lays the live hazel? Is it the one who is named in the deeds, or the one who pulls ragwort on his knees, lifts rocks into a cart, splits larch for steaks, the one who gathers the sheaves, slash-oaks the briars, scatters the seed, cuts his hand on barbed wire, hangs the gate? Is it the one who is named in the deeds? Or is it the one who could surely lead to where children make a hiding place in an old lime tree? He gathers the sheaves. Is it the one who tends cattle and sheep and can tell you how the field got its name? Is it the one who is named in the deeds? Or is it the one who gathers the sheaves? So as you can see, there is plenty of agriculture in my background. I grew up on a farm, and there was a good bit of Bible reading in my childhood. And I was thinking recently about how those stories were so vivid and real to us. And I think partly it was because we could really identify with all the metaphors and the imagery, which was to do with farming. The Blue Bible. Before breakfast, we'd kneel on the kitchen tiles for prayers, then listen to our father read a lesson from the Blue Bible with sticking plaster along its spine, a picture beside each story. We took turns to choose the burning bush, the loaves and fishes that grew and grew to feed the multitudes, Zacchaeus's view from the sycamore tree. Stories told to people who grew their food, who watched over flocks of sheep. We knew those people. We knew the rain that ruined crops, the seed that fell on stony ground, the days when hope, like a restless heifer, goes astray. So, as Cathal said, my first collection is coming out next June, and so I'd like to read the title poem from that collection, The River. What surprises me now is not that you're gone, but how I go on without you, as if I had lost no more than a finger, my hand still strong, perhaps stronger, can do what it must, like carving your name on a branch from the beach by the suck, letting the river take you, so I can call myself free. Only sometimes, like yesterday, or the day before, last night, or this morning, the river flows backwards, uphill to my door. So it means a lot to me that that is the title poem, because that was that poem I started back the first year I started writing poems, 10 years ago. And it was the first poem when I really got a sense of what poetry can do, in how it can express something that you don't think you could express. The word, you can't find the words in any other way, but there's something about the indirect way of poetry that allows you to say it. So the river in that poem is the Suck, and the Suck comes into my collection a few times, flows in and out of it. So that's the title of the next poem, The Suck. Sometimes together, most often alone, we'd slip the catch on the rusted chain, follow the cart track through the bottoms. The river held our stories. It was where we'd go to talk or cry or be quiet in the company of the current, whether it flowed fast after a flood, rolled in circling eddies, or drifted smooth and slow past stands of alder and silver green willow. We could look as far as the next bend, or out to the island, speckled with yellow iris, bordered with sedge. We could dream of leaving, making lives of our own, ask the river to bless us, let us go. So I guess the theme of needing to get away from the farm, which is also a beloved place, is one of the themes, I guess, that I explore in my collection. And this next poem is another expression of that. Against the flow. One day you knew you must turn, begin to swim against the current. Leave the estuary waters, brackish with sediment. Head upstream, through riffles and deeps, mill races that churn in space over sheets of granite, across weirs into rapids that thunder pound, squeeze between boulders to the upper reaches of the river, those waters of blanket bog brown, where you'd find a place in gravel and silt, to hollow a dip, to spawn a life of your own. So I'd like to read a little sequence of four poems, and they come from my observations of my parents' relationship over a long time. And I suppose, like any long marriage, it's a complex story, and there are different chapters in it. And these poems represent four chapters of it, from my perspective, obviously. White Fields. Stopping by his jacket on a hook at the end of the dresser, she breathes him in. Cigarettes, silage, and Brill cream. She touches rough tweed, worn collar and cuffs, pocketed coins, hayseeds, and the cold steel of his bone-handled penknife. She recalls mornings and fields white with hoarfrost, when the heat between them would thaw the frozen pond. He'd cut dark twine, shake out bales in slivers of warmth for breathing clouds of Frisians, circled round, waiting. When the children came, he stayed longer outside, always a lamb or a calf to mind, a fallen wall that needed him. That poem, actually, if any of you have anybody studying for the Leaving Cert, it's a sample paper. It's on a sample paper for the Leaving Cert. So somebody will be asked to study the imagery in that poem. God help them. Anyway, so the next one, the suitcase. As a child, I didn't understand that despair was a neighbour of love. And if you were lucky, it stayed beyond the garden gate, just visiting from time to time to borrow sugar, test faith. As a child, I didn't understand that when my mother showed me the nightie, toothbrush, nylons, miniature Bible and summer dress she kept packed in the suitcase under their bed, it was herself she was telling, I can go if I want to. Sometimes I checked, had she emptied it yet? Sometimes I wanted to shout, go if you're going, why wait? I didn't understand, it was the suitcase that helped her to stay. Then these two are from later on, and they're more recent. Winter. Since the trouble with his heart, she tries to keep him in. But before the breakfast tea is cold, he shrugs on his coat, lifts his cap, blackthorn stick, and heads out across the fields to count cattle and sheep, check how far the flood has risen, break ice for cows at the pond. There's not a pick on him. He feels every breeze like the beach that shelter Rooney's field. But he will not wear the scarf or gloves she offers daily. Back in the kitchen for a fry, he warms his cheek against hers, shows her his hands, thick as fencing stakes, swollen, purple with the cold. Laughing, he asks, did you ever see such shovels? And the last of these four, back of an envelope. I don't know what's come over your father, my mother says on the phone. He left a note on the back of an envelope. Gone herding, won't be long. Where did he think I'd think he was gone? All those years, if I asked where he was going, where he had been, he'd act like I'd tethered him to a post. And then today, he leaves a note. Thanks very much. So poetry, one of the things it does so well is elegy. And in my early 30s, I lost a good friend, and I've wanted to write this poem. I've tried to write this poem for a long time, and then this year, it came together for me. Sorrel Hill. The last Sunday before Christmas, clouds hid the hills. Snow melted as it touched the ground. Bent into the climb, we walked in twos and threes, taking turns to carry her, light as she was. We told stories, funny things she said and did. Memories led us uphill. Like a cello, she was tuned to sadness. Happiness came and went, a chaffinch to her garden gate. But sorrow stayed like days of Wicklow rain. Three hazel saplings to mark the place we would leave her, among bilberries, bell heather and ling. A raven played above us, soaring up, diving down, cronk, cronk. There were some words and a song. Thrown to the sky, she was lifted by the wind, blown back to us, into our hair, our hands, arise. And the next one is also for a friend of mine who died about 7 years ago. And coincidentally, they both were killed in bicycle accidents in Dublin. Just to say about this kintsugi, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's that Japanese art of mending vessels with seams of silver and gold. It's a wonderful art, kintsugi. When I heard you were knocked from your bike on Wolf Tone Quay, I let the teapot slip from my hands to terracotta kitchen tiles. A passerby pillowed your head with his yellow coat, found a photo of your newborn amongst your things. I picked up the pottery pieces, fitted them together with glue, held the teapot tight. All day I waited for news, thought of the Japanese masters who repair precious vessels with seams of silver and gold. Late in the evening, I found the teapot could not hold. And this poem is also for Barbara, the woman in the last poem. And it's written this summer when I had a day with her son, who's now 7. I spy. Now that Stephen is going on 7, it's hard to believe you can't see him from some perch way up there. Hard to believe you didn't teach him the difference between the blue-tailed damselfly and the banded demoiselle, between the green-veined white and the tortoiseshell. Surely it's you who inspired his passion for beetles, who guides his search for shield bugs. I haven't heard him say your name, but I've seen him insist on one more game of I Spy, as if this time he'll find something or someone he has missed. So another theme I found when I was putting together my collection, it wasn't deliberate at all, is that I've written quite a few poems sort of looking at women's lives over, you know, back in the past, and sort of looking at the lack of choices that women had before now. And so the first two, I'm going to read four of those. The first two of those are actually about my own grandmother, who grew up on a farm right on the north coast of Donegal, Portnablath. Some people might know where that is.
Portnablath.
Okay. And her mother died when she was very young, and that shaped her life enormously, which I'll say a bit more about for the next poem. But anyway, among the cows. Her father knew where to find her. She liked to stand among the cows. They smelled of winter and the dark. They let her lean into their warm bellies. She watched them in the fields as they moved solid and slow, wrapped their tongues around sweet grass. She found her own tune in their lowing, learned to milk as soon as her hands were strong enough to squeeze. When her mother died, her father wore his grief the way he wore his Sunday suit, as if it belonged to somebody else. She would listen to the calves calling for days when weaned, until their voices, exhausted, faded like mist from the fields. So, my grandmother then, when she was 18, had an arranged match and came from that little farm in Donegal to a larger farm in County Galway. So I've imagined her voice for this one. I suppose I was always fascinated by her life and what she made of it. The price. You could fit my father's farm into two of my husband's fields. That's why I left, a girl of 18, for the arms of an old man. 4 counties south of the shore, where my mother heaved armfuls of kelp and carrageen into a creel, I folded my life into his. Bore him, 4 girls, 2 boys. I scrubbed his floors, kneaded his bread, carried water from his well. In his wordless way, he was kind. But what price? 2 ponies for a trap, a stove, rooms lit by gas. So those are the two about my grandmother. This one, another one about women formerly, was inspired by a visit to the Tenement Museum in New York, which is, you know, fascinating. Okay, and it's in the form of a pantoum, which I'm sure everybody here knows, but anyway, each line gets repeated. On the boat. On the boat, we were mostly virgins. We talked about who we were going to be. Waitresses, seamstresses, nurses. We didn't talk about why we had to leave. We talked about where we were going to be. The wooden frame house with a picket fence. But we didn't talk about why we had to leave as we touched the lockets around our necks. The wooden frame house with a picket fence led to talk of lost villages, lost streets, as we touched the lockets around our necks. We didn't foresee tenements that grew thick as trees when we talked of lost villages, lost streets, and the diligent men we were going to marry. We didn't foresee tenements that grew thick as trees, the suitcase of memories we would have to carry to the diligent men we were going to marry when we were waitresses, seamstresses, nurses, nor the suitcase of memories we would have to carry from the boat where we were mostly virgins. Thanks very much. And this one, it was thinking about women in the past who went into convents, and maybe the very mixed reasons why they went in, which may not have had to do with faith at all. Enclosed. In obedience to the bell, I work, eat, and pray. I keep custody of my eyes gladly, strive for silence in every movement, walk between chapel and cell with head bent, hands clasped, measured steps. It was not a passion for Christ that brought me here. Some days my soul seems bare as the flagstones in the cloister. But there is balm in the daily polishing of the chapel floor with beeswax and turpentine, in the way sorrow finds its home among windfalls in the orchard, in what stirs at dawn, when as if from the depths of a well, low intoning begins, collects strength, a long plume of plainsong into the nave. I have known storms that buffer and batter the heart. I chose a hard bed, bare boards, a bulwark. Okay, I don't know if I'm going through these very fast or very slow. I'm coming near to the end. I want to do 3 love poems, or poems on the theme of love, I guess you could say. One is a bit about, you know, thinking about is love, does it hit you all in one go? Is it that kind of falling in love, or is it something that grows over time? When I knew. Because you cannot think of a better way to pass the quiet time, you ask me when I knew. I can hardly remember. Was it a boat from the blue discovery? Like finding a rowan in the forest, thrown backwards in an out-of-season storm. Roots loosened, buds opening, its latticed branches spread wide, leaves ready to unfurl. Or was it how celandines, violets, columbine, buttercups and sorrel find their way into a neglected space, without any fanfare, going unnoticed, until one morning after a quarrel, they seem to be calling, calling your name. And that's in the form of a Petrarchan sonnet. And it was having to try to write a Petrarchan sonnet that brought the poem out. So I'm grateful for that. So the next poem on the theme of love is actually to celebrate the Civil Partnership Act, which was brought into law on the 19th of July 2010. In fact, when it was first announced, I was on a workshop with Sue down in Bantry. James Harper was doing it, and I remember that my absolute joy that day. But anyway, I suppose Epithalamium is a traditional wedding song, and I was aware just in 2011 there were so many of our friends were getting married at last, and the joy about relationships coming out into the sunshine. Epithalamium. Like an underground stream, love carves a path through fissures, cavities, clay and shale, flows over beds of mineral gems, feeds hidden lakes, artesian wells, then tumbles out from the side of a hill, runs headlong over gravel, opens a channel down to the river, where waters from rills and creeks mingle in the pull of the current, promise to carry each other until they meet the sea. So then when it came to my own civil partnership in April of 2011, I wanted to write my vows, of course, and I found it very difficult to do, and it was something about, as we were already together 19 years, a lot of the illusions had disappeared well by that stage. But there's something else you have after 19 years. So vows. I can't promise it's chiseled from gold in spirals that speak of forever. I can't tell you it's wise as a mountain with pines that reach for heaven. I can't promise it's flawless as honey gathered by bees in bell heather. I can't say it's simple as silk, spun from cocoon into treasure. But I promise it's rooted as rowan, with berries that sing to September. I promise it's to and it's fro, with surprise like Glenmalure weather. I promise a seasoned rowboat, moored or unmoored at your pleasure. And we live in Glenmalure, so they're bringing a bit of window here. A lot of my poems, some of my poems go back to Roscommon, but a lot of others have come from Wicklow, and nearly all of them have been written in Wicklow. So just two more poems, okay? One is called Dressage. A young friend of ours, a neighbour across the road, told me about learning to ride and her teacher getting her to ride without saddle or reins. And I thought, how wonderful to get your balance. So that helped this poem get going. Dressage. You find your seat by riding without saddle or reins. Sit deep. Fall off. Get on again. Give and take with lightness of hand and leg. Shift your weight as you feel how she needs to move. You find your rhythm by listening to the sequence of hooves. count the beat of every stride. Learn to read how she holds her head, when to steady, when to ask her to lengthen her pace, so the moment between lifting and falling is held, sometimes so long that together you don't touch the ground. And then coming up to the last poem, just to say, first of all, thanks to Paul for inviting me to read tonight. Really appreciate it. Thanks very much for being such a lovely audience. Great, lovely attention. And thanks to the people, all my friends who came along tonight and went to the effort of being here, as well as everybody else. So the last one is a little blessing. Let there be. From breath to breath, from dusk to dusk, let there be rainfall when the soil is parched as rock. Let there be sunshine when the barley bends to be cut. Let there be rainbows when the days are short of light. Let there be wind when our boats are turned for home. Thank you very much.
Okay, it was just about to ask for another round of applause for Jane Clark. And that was Claire Van Zandt.